Chapter 12 Farewell and Freedom.
"We think we can help you, Jen."
It was Samian. Jen wondered at the offer. After the first day, the three warriors not once expressed that they knew about his circumstances or feelings.
"Yes," Alberin continued, "with your help, we can free you from the bondage of the stones, and you can flee. We can no longer tolerate the use to which we have been put. We long to be free."
"Not yet," Jen said. "Teach me everything. Never stop. I must know it all."
"What we propose to do will do that, Jen. You need suffer no longer."
Telmeron sounded more compassionate than Jen had ever heard him. From the scenes they showed him, Jen could not see how any of them had a grain of tender feeling left.
"It is not time," Jen continued. "I must learn all I can from the Shadan, and while it is winter, I cannot escape with Raphael. The cold would kill him, and I cannot leave while Torbrand and Omar still draw breath."
"Revenge must not govern your actions, Jen," Samian counselled gravely.
"Then what should govern my actions? My days are filled with hate and killing, and so far the killing I've seen has been of the innocent and undeserving. Killing the Shadan and Omar, whether out of revenge or justice, is warranted by everything good and decent, and if goodness and decency are served, then I care little what feeling motivates it."
Silence followed.
"Very well," Samian said, voice resigned. "Our lessons are nearly done. Let's begin."
Torbrand kept to his word, allowing Jen time alone with Raphael every morning to talk, though Jen rarely found anything to say. Raphael's paled skin clung to his bones, face racked with worry and a hacking cough wearing the old bard down. But valiantly, Raphael ignored his discomfort and doted upon his apprentice. Jen appreciated his attempts to rekindle his interest in music, but no matter how much Raphael prodded, Jen could not fathom ever plucking the lute strings again, much less singing. Music required some depth of feeling from which to be born, and revenge was all he could find in an otherwise vacant heart. In the following weeks, Jen wholly embraced his training, thirsty for knowledge, and the Shadan took delight in Jen's enthusiasm. Within 2 weeks, Jen could catch and deflect arrows, fight blinded, and take on multiple opponents with ease. The stones continued their work, refining his senses and advancing his technique. The lessons of the stones gradually turned to defence, which, unfortunately, increasingly featured the killing of innocent people. Jen never told the Shadan that he could understand the language spoken by his teachers in the stones, for they taught him that if you must tell your enemy something, tell him nothing. If you can't tell him nothing, tell him a lie. He could sense that he was now surpassing Torbrand's expectations, and the Shadan took pleasure in sparring with his student, his mood magnanimous and light, as the snow began to melt, dripping from trees and rooftops. Raphael's health continued to deteriorate, and he slept for long chunks of the day. The Shadan took no notice of the old bard's distress and never acknowledged his presence or pressed him to perform further. Jen could hear Raphael coughing whenever his training took him near the house, and at the end of each day, Jen found that Raphael was invariably by the fire, hunched in a chair, pale and spent. One evening, after facing down 10 of the Shadan's soldiers, in a scenario designed to teach him how to detect and defend against an urban ambush, Jen entered the Scholz's front door, and his old master smiled at him, face waxy and pallid.
"Let's get you to bed," Jen entreated him gently, taking his arm. "Thank you, my boy," he said, face kind and sad. "You are truly the best apprentice I ever had, Jen. When you're done training, if you escape, remember you are a musician. You were meant to gladden people's hearts, not stop them. Remember it."
"Don't worry," Jen said, helping him into his room. "You'll have time to remind me later. This winter is almost over. We'll find our way out of here together." Raphael patted him feebly on the shoulder.
"Sleep well, Jen. I am very tired."
Jen left and went to his own room. Since resolving upon his plan, he could relax more easily,
and he approached the dream lessons with an appetite equal to those he lived through during the day. As consciousness faded, he found himself back in the enormous cathedral for the first time since beginning. His masters stood before him, unchanged but solemn.
"We have taught you all we have to teach," Samian said. "It should not have been taught in this manner. For apprentices past, we at this point would recommend you to service against Mikik and his ilk. But you seem resolved upon another plan."
"I think killing Torbrand Cairn will be service against Mikik." Samian held Jen's eyes with a sympathetic but firm look.
"Then you do not understand. You told us some nights ago that the motive behind your actions did not matter, as long as good came of it. We warn you that it is not so. We are inspired to act by many things, but if what inspires our actions be evil, then what apparent good they accomplish will rot and come to evil purpose. It may not be readily apparent, but the law of Eldaloth is that pure good can only proceed from pure motive."
Jen knew this teaching. Your man Milishim preached it. To hear Samian say it, a man who killed more than Jen could fathom, was either egregious hypocrisy or some wisdom Jen could not grasp.
"You know much now, Jen," said Telmarin, "but you lack experience. Facing the Shaddan and Omar will see you dead. We sacrificed everything we loved ages before you were born to raise up warriors to serve the Ha'ulric and the Shalain. Only in the world they bring will there be an end to senseless misery and woe at the hands of Mikik and the world he corrupted. Put Shaddan Cairn from your mind. Escape."
"We have nothing more to offer you," Elberon concluded.
"We will not speak to you again until you seek us."
The voices faded, and for the first time in months, Jen slept deeply and without dreaming. When the first light of dawn woke him, he felt refreshed and fit. As he stood, his foot kicked something on the floor. A letter, loosely folded, lay upon the ground close to where someone had shoved it under the door. Jen recognized the writing as Raphael's.
"Dear Jen, I've little time to write and deliver this. May I start by saying that I love you as my son, and because of this love, I have watched every day in agony as you were tortured and destroyed, body and spirit, at the hands of Torbrand Cairn. I know he uses me as leverage against you, to manipulate you to his will just as he did Regina. I will not be used in this way. I am old. I have lived a life without regret, a happy life, until recent events. I cannot live knowing I am his tool against you. I have cheated Tolnorian Winters so many times that I feel I owe them a debt. When you read this, you will be free to act without fear for anyone else. It is my dying wish that you escape at the first opportunity. I know the stones bind you to him. If you can ever escape, or if care never releases you, do not spend your strength fighting him. Run! Find yourself again. Live again. That is what Regina would want, and that is what I want. If you ever loved me, then obey me now. Escape. Ever your affectionate master, Raphael de Bellarmine. P.S. Do not think ill of my choice. It chose me before I chose it."
Jen bolted through his bedroom door, letting the letter drop behind him, and sprinted through the house. Torbrand was at the room already, shaking his head.
"The old fool left his window open and threw his blankets off. Froze to death."
Raphael lay dead, hands crossed over his chest. His favourite lute lay beside him on the bed, as did an empty bottle of wine. On his desk, an open ink bottle sat next to a spent candle.
"Killed himself, then, so I couldn't use him any more," Torbrand commented, voice flat. "I suppose this is what you Tolnorians consider noble. I assume by the ink bottle that he wrote you a note, or did you sense his death? Well, no matter."
Numbness deadened Jen's heart. Somehow, in the death of his most beloved friend, he found true, abiding emptiness. Calm settled over him, and as Raphael wished, he felt free. The world was stripped of those he loved, and nothing existed except battle and the sword. Jen sat back against the wall of his room, arms resting on his knees. Shadan Cairn left him alone for the rest of the day, and Jen heard him come in twice, and then only for short periods of time. Jen read Raphael's note over and over until he memorized it. As empty minutes turned into empty hours, a remorse leaked into the emptiness that possessed him that morning. A remorse deep and viscous, a regret that, however unintentionally, he was partly the cause of the death of the two people he loved best. If only he'd fought harder, learned faster, treated them with more concern. If only he'd tried to help them escape, even though he couldn't go with them. Dropping the letter, he shut his eyes and pushed away the feelings, using discipline to stifle emotion and plan his next move. Raphael's entreaty to escape touched him, and he wanted to obey, but he also wanted another chance at Omar, and just one chance at Torbrand. Reason, however, told him that the latter course would likely end in his death. Were he to face Torbrand and win, Omar would order every soldier in the camp to hunt him down. Jen knew his prowess at arms surpassed any single soldier in the camp, but one inferior opponent with hundreds to help compensated for any disparity in skill. They would overwhelm him, and end a life with but one single claim to glory, killing the Shadan. He watched the shaft of light from the sun stretch across the floor toward the door. His decision rested on which he wanted more, a chance to create a new life with the skills he had learned, or risk death avenging his friends. Near evening, he decided. Escape was his best chance at fulfilling both desires. Above all, he wished to please Raphael, to find some way to be useful in the world. If Samian, Telmarin, and Elberin could somehow release the hold of the stones upon him, he was sure he could sneak out of the town and to safety. The best course was to ride to Sipton as quickly as possible to see if any preparations were being made against Ogmir. If so, he could provide valuable intelligence and, with his skill, be allowed to fight Torbrand come spring. If the nobility were yet unapprised or unconvinced, then he would try to succeed where Gant and the Morwalds had failed. Shadan Cairn would expect this, and Jen knew he had the road patrolled unceasingly and in numbers, but Jen knew several backways to Sipton that might keep him away from the Shadan's men. Jen heard his master enter, thundering to Lorraine that he would take dinner momentarily. Jen lifted his head as Torbrand stepped through his door and regarded him with satisfaction.
"The time has come! Spring nears, and I shall have scouts to send, battle plans to draw up, and a fresh contingent of soldiers to prepare. Your training is at an end, so tomorrow I will remove the stones and you will face me. You cannot understand the eagerness with which I wait for the morrow. I will kill you, make no mistake, but it will be a fight the likes of which I will not enjoy again for some time. Prepare yourself, then. I will send the Pure Man to you, if you wish. His time, too, is coming to an end, and I am sure he will have many wonderful views of Erelinda to share with you. So farewell. Sleep well."
The Shadan left without waiting for a reply, and Jen didn't give him one. At Cairn's order, Lorraine, brown eyes fearful, brought him a double helping of stewed lamb and bread, and Jen gulped every bit down. Food might be scarce in the coming days. She collected the bowl sometime later, and Jen waited, unmoving, while the light in his window dimmed from blue to orange to black. When at last full dark came, he lay on his back, fingering the stones at his chest. He didn't know how to summon the three masters, so he kept them fixed in his mind. When sleep came, they stood before him in the chapel, grave but expectant.
"You have changed your mind, then?" Samian said.
"I have," Jen replied.
Elberin smiled.
"Then wisdom claims the victory, and we will at last be free."
Samian and Telmarin embraced each other, and then Elberin, faces joyful. Jen couldn't help but be touched. The sacrifice they had made to protect a woman and man they would never know revealed a true nobility of character and an unwavering faith. As to Raphael, Jen felt he owed them a debt. For their sake, he could not squander his life or misspend his strength and skill.
"But how can it be?" Jen asked. "I've tried to remove the stones to no avail. No one can do it. My friends tried many times."
"To be truthful, Jen," Samian confessed, "we do not know if what we intend to do will succeed. The unveiling of Triss was to trigger our release, but long ago,
In another day, when our training was abused, we devised a way that we might free ourselves. While the stones would still bind master to student and refine the body, we would be gone, rendering the stones worthless for the teaching of war. Accomplishing this, however, will not be easy on you, but could also be of great benefit. Jen felt uneasy.
How? What do you propose we try?
Alberon stepped forward.
Let me explain. The stones allow us to teach you so quickly by linking us directly to your mind. We will use that link, one by one, to enter your mind, to take your body as our own. The magic binding of the stone prevents anyone save your master from removing them. We too, Jen, are your masters. If we inhabit your body, we think we can remove the stones. You need not fear. Since our spirits are not yours, we will, in time, find ourselves expelled and released to Erelinda, leaving you to you. At least we believe so. Some part of us may ever be trapped here.
In time you'll be expelled? Jen asked.
Yes. Perhaps the magic no longer exists, but in our time, evil and good magicians alike would leave their bodies and enter those of others. They could not permanently do so, however. The body will reject any spirit not its own. The less willing the victim, the quicker.
We must ask you, however, to be willing so we can remain long enough to remove the stones and let you escape. It is also possible that you will remember a great deal of our lives besides what we shared with you.
Passage through the link to your mind should be quick, but we cannot be sure of the outcome. Do you wish us to try?
Jen swallowed hard. Before sleeping, he had believed that his master's plan was guaranteed to work. Learning that they couldn't promise its success dimmed his enthusiasm, and to find that it involved opening himself to possession soured his opinion even further. Father Millisham condemned possessions in the darkest of tones, relating tales of good men turned without provocation to murderers and thieves by the manipulations of one of Mickick's disembodied servants. Jen wavered, wondering if his chances wouldn't be improved by fighting Cairn after all. The prospect of being free, however, eventually won out over his concerns.
Let's be quick. The sooner I can leave, the better.
Very well. You will naturally want to resist, but you must fight it, Alberon instructed him.
Samian, you go first. I will come second, until Marin last.
Jen breathed in, relaxing himself. Samian, smiling, walked toward him, and then into him. At once Jen felt his presence at the borders of his mind, and every instinct within him told him to push it away. He could feel the walls of defence building within him, and it required many moments of rigorous concentration to break them down, to open the door, and to let Samian in. And when he entered, Jen's inner vision exploded into a riot of images, feelings, and memories accumulated over a lifetime. Samian was a woodsman before a warrior, and he knew every plant and animal that walked through mountain and wood. He spoke fluent Elvish and held a great compassion for all things innocent. Most dear, the clearest of all his memories, were times spent with his elven wife, who he had known would outlive him. Selva Hel was her name, and every memory of her was a joy. By her, Samian had a daughter, dark-haired and beautiful. He loved her to distraction and taught her everything of nature. Her name was Kaena, his leaf daughter. The day he left them, in secret and in the dark, was the saddest of his recollections. Samian wondered if his wife and daughter still lived. He wanted to know if they remembered him, if Selva Hel married another, and what Kaena chose to do with her life. He had 1,000 stories to tell, 100 things he forgot to say. He longed to return to a place not seen since the shattering, the Ashwood. Beautiful, peaceful, warm. He wondered if Erelinda could be half so wonderful, and who of those he loved awaited him there. Next came Alberon, and the memories of his austere and proper elven master taught him what it was to be noble. Alberon lived many human lifetimes before the wars started, and even in good times when opportunities to sacrifice and serve were few, he sought them out. He never took credit, never vaunted himself, never sought his own need or aggrandizement. When war came, he was counted the best of warriors, not only because of his skill, but also because of his capacity for compassion.
His elven subordinates followed him out of love for the elf, not out of reverence for his rank. Elberon, too, longed for the peaceful confines of Ashwood. Lastly, Telmerin entered his mind, a sharp contrast to Elberon and Samian. Telmerin was born to command and had confidence, almost to a fault, in his abilities. When decisions needed to be made, he raised his voice first and put down dissident views without regard to the feelings of those who forwarded them. He was brash, and whatever he did completely and without remorse. He loved many women, but loved war more. And of the three warriors, Jen marveled the most at his prowess. Samian and Elberon earned the respect of their enemies for their character and skill. Telmerin terrified his foes with sheer power, his name a curse on their lips. Jen opened his eyes and came awake, but not as himself. He could see, hear, and feel, but someone else moved him. All three personalities struggling for the mastery of his mind. The moons shone through the window, and in their light Jen saw the three stones upon the ground. He was free in one fashion, but not another. And Jen feared Torbrand would find him standing, stupidly mumbling in the middle of his room, while three men fought over him. Telmerin won the struggle, and Jen watched, as a spectator, as the warrior used his body to gather the stones and slip out the window. The moonlight was both a blessing and a curse. Telmerin worried about being seen, but he felt grateful for the visibility it provided in territory not familiar to him. Ever the soldier, Telmerin sneaked up on a sentry, broke his neck, and took his sword before sprinting out of town. To Jen's consternation, Telmerin wanted to go north. He was from Lalmanar, the greatest of all the former ancient human kingdoms. Telmerin had learned of its fall and its people's migrations west to Rugoth, and Jen could sense that he wanted to go to the portal on Emerald Lake. Jen wondered if he realized the distance, or Tolnor's need of help against Ogmer. Frustrated, Jen attempted to regain control of himself, finding Elberon and Samian competing against him, but none could breach Telmerin's mastery of Jen's mind, a mastery maintained by his natural will and passion. When morning came, Telmerin hid in one of the increasingly infrequent stands of trees. Forest gave way to open plain east of Tel, poor land for anyone trying to avoid capture. Sure enough, a scout on fast horse rode by at some distance, and they saw him both coming and going. Telmerin did not allow movement until nightfall, though everyone within Jen's mind agreed on that point. Over the next few days, they saw nothing of scouts or human company, making good time across the flat, even ground, gradually turning north toward the reed steps and the harsh red wind breaks beyond. Telmerin relinquished control to Samian for brief stints, so the experienced huntsman could scavenge for food, if it could be called that. Hibernating beetles, roots and dead grass, and not in great supply, were all they could find. Muddy pools of melting snow provided ample water, but his belly growled at its constant emptiness and discomfort. As the days wore on, the distinction between the personalities struggling within him started to blur. At times, Jen found he couldn't separate his memories from those of his companions. What they had done, he had done. What they felt, he felt. Jen fought to maintain his identity, force his dominance and recapture control of himself, but Telmerin and his desires were becoming his own, though more frequently the desires of Elberon and Samian imprinted themselves more strongly upon his mind. A fortnight gone, they travelled south, east, and west, as much as north. The raging conflict of four personalities trying to merge and the lack of nourishment often dropped Jen to the ground unconscious and twitching. The sword they'd carried for untold miles came up missing after one such episode. Jen could not gather enough order or volition in his mind to search for food, and finally, after 3 weeks of wandering, his mind was such a riot of conflicting memories, vivid images, and powerful yearnings that he fell, only dimly recognizing that the dirt under his hand was a road, before he closed his eyes and gave up the fight.